court reporter needs to stretch her fingers or... All right. Okay, this is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Tony Barnes in the case of 22-114. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Barnes, please come forward and introduce yourself and your counsel.
Hi, I'm Dr. Barnes.
And David Stoll, appearing as Dr. Barnes' attorney.
Okay. Dr. Barnes, you have received a letter informing you of the matter to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censoring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We have no additional materials.
Okay. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you'll be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may direct them through me. Let's see, Dr. Wright, can you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Yes, thank you. On March 21st, 2022, Greta, a 5.5-year-old female Swedish Fallhound, was presented to respondent due to wanting to go outside frequently to relieve herself. The dog would urinate sometimes and other times not. Complainant suspected it was a behavioral issue, however, respondent wanted to make sure there was not a medical issue. Respondent attempted to obtain a urine sample via cystocentesis twice. A second attempt, the dog moved and the respondent aspirated frank blood. Respondent spoke with complainant to ask if she could bring in a fresh urine sample in. During this time, the dog collapsed. Staff and associate veterinarian began CPR without success. The following day, complainant approved a necropsy. Necropsy revealed a lacerated vena cava, presumably a result of the cystocentesis.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Barnes, at this time, I would like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Dr. Barnes, we would now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
First of all, I want to again extend my sincere sympathies to the folks for their loss. Although my feelings pale in comparison to theirs, this case has been a nightmare for us all. Obtaining urine samples is a routine process for every small animal veterinary practice. But as we all know, even the most routine medical procedure is not without risks. In this regard, I want you to know that I have performed approximately 3,000 to 4,000 cystocentesis over the course of my 24-year career, all without incident or complication until this one. When Greta was presented to me, I was assisted by a staff that included three technicians, one of whom is a certified veterinary technician, the second is in training to be a CBT, and the third has over 30 years of experience in the field of veterinary medicine. All of us had extensive experience in the procedure that was used for the cystocentesis is the exact same textbook procedure that we've always used. Unfortunately, this is one in a thousand case where you do everything right by skilled, experienced practitioners, but have an unfortunate end, and in this case, fatal complication. As for how Greta presented on this day, Greta was not a new patient. I had treated Greta since she was a puppy, and she did not appear nervous on this day as stated by the investigative committee. She presented the same way she always did. Because there was a concern about a potential urinary tract infection, I appropriately recommended urinalysis, which the owner approved. Obviously, a urine sample is needed, and cystocentesis is the gold standard method for obtaining an uncontaminated urine sample. The collection in this manner is routinely performed by technicians. In this case, my technician, Angie Glover, took Greta back in attempts to get urine. When I went back to see if she had obtained one, Angie told me that Greta's bladder appeared small on the ultrasound and she preferred that I perform the procedure. I put the ultrasound probe on Greta, and although Greta had a relatively small bladder, I felt comfortable going forward with urine draw because over the course of my career, I have obtained urine from bladders that were just as small or smaller than Greta's bladder. Obviously, it is easy after the fact to say that the procedure should not have been performed because of the outcome given, but given the information at the time, it was medically appropriate for me to attempt the procedure. After two tries, I stopped and advised the owner of our attempt at cystocentesis and asked if she could catch some urine at home and bring it in. During that discussion, the owner never expressed any concerns that I had performed the procedure without her informed consent and understood that since the procedure had not obtained any urine, she would have to try and obtain urine at home. Unfortunately, Greta suddenly and unexpectedly collapsed before she could be taken home. CPR was attempted, but unsuccessful. As for the investigative committee's concern regarding the timeliness in which a necropsy was offered to the owners, I don't think the committee understood the chronology of events because a necropsy was offered in a timely manner, as I will explain. This incident took place late in the day on Monday, March 21st, 2022, at approximately 4:30 p.m. According to the statement of Dr. Jenny Cease, which is in your materials, she became aware that CPR was being performed on Greta sometime between 4 and 5 p.m. While CPR was being conducted, we contacted Mr. Folks and was informed of what was going on, and I asked for him to come to the practice. When Mr. Folks arrived at approximately 5:30 p.m., CPR had already been going on for approximately 45 minutes, and he asked it to be stopped. Greta was then prepared for the owners to have some alone time with her before they left, which was presumably around 6 p.m. Fortunately, I kept the timestamp text messages exchange that I had with Stacy Folks after she got home because I can tell you the exact time that I offered a necropsy and the exact time the next morning Ms. Folks authorized it. Those text messages confirmed that at 7:13 p.m., approximately an hour and 13 minutes after the Folks had said their goodbyes to Greta, I sent Stacy a message offering to perform a necropsy. In response, she sent back to me that said, "I don't know." We continued exchanging text messages until 11:07 that night. The following morning at 7:25, Ms. Folks restarted the text exchange by saying to me, "I think I would like to proceed with a necropsy." At 7:26, within a minute of her text accepting the offer of the necropsy, I texted her back and said, "Okay, I will let them know." The necropsy was done that same day by Dr. Amanda Gordon, and the results were timely relayed to the owners. So I actually offered a necropsy 1 hour and 13 minutes after the owner said goodbye to Greta, at a time when the owners weren't prepared to decide if they wanted one done. Presumably, they wanted to sleep on it, which I understand. We preserved Greta until the next morning when they authorized the necropsy, and the necropsy was done within 24 hours of Greta's passing, and a definitive cause of death was found. I hope this clarifies the issue. I am now available to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'd now like to ask the board members if anyone has any questions for Dr. Barnes.
I have a question of Dr. Barnes. You said you've done thousands of cystocentesis. What is your protocol after drawing frank blood during the cystocentesis?
That's the only time I've ever drawn frank blood, and you know, I watched her for a few minutes to make sure she wasn't doing anything, and she didn't. And then when the tech started doing a nail trim is when she collapsed.
Okay, so that had never happened before, and you drew
no
blood. Okay, thank you.
Could I?
Sure.
When you say drew frank blood, how much?
A hub.
Just a hub?
Just a hub.
Thank you. That's my only question.
Okay. Dr. Wright?
My question is kind of more centered on the behavior of the dog and how things were going. Can you describe like how the dog was doing, the position we were in for the cystocentesis, what was going on?
She was in a trough, and the front legs and the back legs were being held by technicians, and they were petting her and whatnot, and then she was pretty calm in the trough. Okay. And then on the second time that I attempted, she did move a little bit.
Okay. Before you were in or after you were in?
After I was in.
Okay. And you said, there was another question, you just got a very small amount of frank blood.
I just got a hub.
You didn't see if it clotted or anything?
Nope.
Those are my main questions around right there.
What, how much volume-wise is a hub? I'm a layperson.
Like a tenth of a cc?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, real small.
Thank you.
Drops.
Drops, okay.
What the needle attaches to.
Oh, the top of the...
Yeah, that little piece of plastic, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I thought it was some special medical measurement.
We use it a lot, but no.
Okay, there are no further questions? Okay, you both can step back. Now I'd like to ask the complainant to come forward. Okay, and please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, my name is Stacy Folks.
Okay, I am now going to swear you in. Ms. Folks, at this time, do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. We have read the materials you've provided, and you may now address the board.
Thank you. First, I feel that I should mention that today, November 16th, is actually Greta's birthday, and she would have turned 6 today. Other than that, I just have a few things to add to my written statement. I want to emphasize that this procedure was not necessary. Dr. Barnes has not addressed the fact that she chose a course that was not only risky, and especially risky under these circumstances, but also 100% unnecessary. As I described in detail in my written statement, Dr. Barnes was very aware of my ability to bring in samples from home and to do anything else asked of me in terms of home care for my animals over the years. I believe that her choice to proceed down the path of cystocentesis at all to begin with shows a lapse in medical judgment. As to communication in this case, my bone of contention is not the necropsy. It has to do with Dr. Barnes' complete failure to tell me she intended to do this procedure and to seek my informed consent. I also disagree with one thing she said today, which was that she claimed she told me about a cystocentesis after she came back to the exam room and discussed collecting a urine sample at home. She did not do that. She said nothing about what means had been used with Greta. She simply came into the room and said, we were unable to get any urine today, and proceeded to ask me to try to bring some in the next day. For countless other procedures involving risk, as you know, informed consent is sought and signatures are obtained. As stated by Dr. Wright at the last hearing, cystocentesis always involves some risk, albeit usually rare. Here, the risk was higher with the presence of at least one, if not two, contraindications, a very small bladder, and a nervous dog. We have heard Dr. Barnes claim that the risk was 1 in 1,000. Even if this had been the risk, if she had communicated with me and explained that to me, I would have declined and opted to bring in a sample from home. 1 in 1,000 would not have been a risk I was willing to take under the circumstances at the time, where my dog, to me, had shown no signs of a urinary tract infection. There was no blood in the urine. She wasn't straining to urinate. As mentioned in my statement, written statement, I've had dogs with chronic UTIs and I know what to look for. This was simply no urgency, no circumstances in this case under which I would have agreed to take a risk of my dog's life. And I believe in this case, the risk for Greta was actually much higher than 1 in 1,000, given her small bladder and her nervousness. Therefore, here especially, Dr. Barnes should have sought my informed consent and should not have proceeded down this path without discussing with me first. Had she done so, we would not be here today. Whether the risk was 1 in 1,000 or something higher, she had a duty to discuss the procedure with me and get my informed consent before proceeding. Instead, she chose not to communicate at all. Further, Dr. Barnes did not manage the risk she subjected Greta to. She tried the procedure not once, but twice, while Greta was squirming and nervous. And I can't fathom sticking a sharp device into an animal's abdomen while they're moving around. The second she noticed Greta was nervous or squirmy would have been the time to stop and discontinue the procedure. Not to mention, she should have never tried to begin with, given the small bladder nervousness and my lack of consent. As to nervousness, Dr. Barnes now fabricates a version of events in which Greta was not nervous. I believe she's doing so in an attempt at self-preservation. While I'm not privy to the documents you have in front of you, I know from the medical records I received directly from the clinic and from my own observations of Greta that day that she was visibly nervous to everyone else who was present. And if Dr. Barnes cannot recognize signs of nervousness in a dog, then that is an additional problem that does not bode well for her patients. And lastly, I want to express my concern about Dr. Barnes' statements at these proceedings before this board. I haven't heard her say a single thing showing that she has learned anything from this incident. Her response seems to be, she did everything right, none of this was preventable, and she would do the exact same thing again. It's clear to me that Greta's death was preventable, and Dr. Barnes was the one who could have prevented it. From her choice of cystocentesis as the means to collect urine, when non-invasive means were readily available, to her decision to proceed without discussing it with me, Greta's owner, to her decision to proceed even after learning how small Greta's bladder was, as told to her not one, but actually two technicians, I was told by Dr. Cease, who had observed the bladder on the ultrasound, to her choice to not even stop when Greta was wiggling and nervous, and then her choice to leave Greta's side after aspirating blood. Any one of these things, if not more, could have prevented Greta's death. I had expected that Dr. Barnes would come forward and express at least an ounce of regret for some part of what she did that day. That would have showed she had learned something from what she did so that it would be less likely to happen in the future. Instead, she has maintained that she did everything right. I believe that her lack of insight into her own choices and actions presents a real danger to future patients and their families. As I said at the last hearing, I believe it is time for Dr. Barnes to stop practicing. However, I've since been told that license revocation does not normally occur without a significant documented history. Therefore, if the board is not inclined to revoke Dr. Barnes' license, I ask in the alternative that you limit her scope of representation to prohibit her from performing any invasive procedures. And I am open for questions if there are any.
Thank you. Do any board members have questions for the complainant?
Yeah, and sorry for your loss. Thank you for being here. So I just had a question around when we were in the exam, we were presented for kind of going out multiple times at night. What was the conversation about after that, before Greta was taken to the back for a urine sample? What was said at that point?
So Dr. Barnes came in the room. I just talked again about how Greta was going outside at night. I clarified, I don't believe it's UTI. I mentioned, I told her I didn't see any signs of that myself. I also mentioned that sometimes Greta would go out on the porch, or not even leave the porch. She wasn't going out in the yard and straining. She wasn't doing any of that stuff you would normally see. She would just run out and went like right back in, barking to come back in. So there was no even attempt at urination, at least half the time. So I told that to Dr. Barnes. And she said something to the effect of, okay, well, I still wanted to get some urine and see if we roll out UTI. I said, okay. And again, no mention of what means she would use, if there was any invasive means she had intended. I wasn't explained to me. I had no idea. I do recall also asking her, well, if it's not UTI, then what? You know, what would the course be? And she said, well, we'll talk about that, you know, later. Because I'm wondering to myself, would it be like doggy Prozac, or would it be a behaviorist? But she didn't get to that. She really wanted to get back and do the urine first. So that's what I recall.
Okay. You did authorize the urine analysis, just not how to obtain the sample. Nothing was talked about with that.
Correct. I understood that she would be getting urine, but my understanding from all the other animals I've had, including, I guess Greta had never presented with this before, but any other animal, including at Dr. Barnes' clinic, is that they go and they pee in a tray. Or you bring it in from home.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That was my question.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, thank you. You may step back.
Thank you.
Dr. Barnes, do you or your legal counsel have any additional remarks or questions you'd like to ask?
Yes. The Cynthia Olson thesis itself, it was performed in the exact same manner that Dr. Barnes had performed this routine procedure, she said, 3,000 to 4,000 times in her 25-year career. And the evidence is done that, or the evidence is presented is that it was done in accordance with the standard of care. For you to find that she was grossly negligent, you have to have evidence that she deviated from the standard of care and that she performed the procedure in an incorrect manner, and there is no such evidence. Granted, we have an unfortunate and tragic outcome, but perforation of the vena cava is an inherent, albeit extremely rare, risk of the procedure. And I think I submitted some materials ahead of your review that shows how rare that it can happen. But it is extremely, extremely rare, but it's an inherent risk in the procedure. And that leads to the next issue that you need to address, as to the issue of informed consent. And you'll have to determine for yourself if the standard of care is for a veterinarian to explain in detail how every routine cynthiocentesis is performed when it is offered. It's my understanding that veterinarians routinely do exactly what Dr. Barnes did in this case, and that is to tell the owner that we're going to take your dog back and get a urine sample and then send it in for analysis. They do that without going into the details of the procedure and without discussing the most extreme, remote potential complication. I can't imagine that it's as common practice or the standard of care that requires a veterinarian to tell owners that there's a potential of a laceration of the pet's vena cava. In this case, I think we can't overlook the anatomical abnormality that we had, the small bladder. And the practice actually took precautions in that regard. This procedure is typically delegated to technicians. The technicians attempted it. There was some evidence before the review that the technicians told her not to do the procedure. That's not true at all. And we submitted a statement to that effect from one of the technicians, and the second technician is here if you have any questions on that issue. They attempted to perform the procedure, and then when they noticed how small the bladder was, they appropriately delegated or asked that the veterinarian perform the procedure, and she did, and when it became there was a complication, it was stopped. In the end, you know, despite this tragic outcome in this case, no statute or regulation was violated, and we ask that the case be dismissed. Again, she did this procedure thousands and thousands of times, and this is that 1 in 5,000 time event that you can perform the procedure correctly according to the standard of care, and unfortunately have a tragic outcome. Do you have anything else you wish to add?
My communication with Ms. Holmes could have been better. I will absolutely admit that. But I feel like, you know, I've gotten urine from bladders as small or smaller than that many, many times in my career. And I don't think that it was not a misguided decision to do the cystocentesis. Rule out a urinary tract infection with a behavior problem.
Thank you.
Okay. I do have a question. What size needle and syringe did you use?
I used a 5cc syringe with a 22 1.5-inch needle.
Thank you.
Any other board members have questions?
You said that you've done this maybe 4,000 times, and you also said that it's usually done by text?
What'll happen is our experienced technicians can certainly try to do it. With an ultrasound guided, they've been trained to do that. But if they do not feel comfortable doing that, then they ask the veterinarian to do it.
And again, how many years have you been?
24, almost 25.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you may both step back now. This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
All right, thank you. And going through and reading this, let me pull back up the actual IR again. It's, I mean, we know the outcome of this case, or at least of what happened here. Unfortunately, it was a complication from a procedure. And the question is, was there any kind of negligence in that procedure, or was this one of those things that unfortunately can happen in medicine? And that's where the discussion that basically is going to be around today is, was this appropriate and just an unfortunate outcome, or was this totally wrong? I know there's concern around the size of the bladder, and being a small bladder, that's actually pretty common with urinary tract infections. We do see small bladders because usually the bladder wall is inflamed, and as you have urine in there stretching it out, it's going to be painful, so that the animals tend to keep that bladder pretty small. That's why we see the one of the hallmark signs, the polyuria. You're urinating frequently in small amounts. So the size of the bladder in and of itself is not necessarily a complicating factor to me. It would necessarily, or it would tell me we probably need to be a little more cautious with that if we can't isolate it and hold it and feel it directly and go straight in, which probably most of us do in most patients, especially cats. But we used an ultrasound. So we isolated, we looked, we did that. So I mean, we were using the proper equipment. We used a 5cc syringe with a 22 gauge needle, inch and a half. That's fairly standard. Sometimes that inch and a half is a little long because the bladder is usually pretty right there at the wall. But I mean, that's not abnormal. So from what I'm seeing, we went into this with the proper intent and proceeded the right way. Unfortunately, patient moved, and that's through no fault of the patient. I mean, yeah, you're sticking a needle in them. When I get a flu shot, I move a lot of times, so it's not fun. But again, was this negligence, was this malpractice, was this an unfortunate situation? And I do agree, I think it more goes around the informed consent portion and what that truly means here. So I definitely would love some input and comments from everybody else, and then I'll start keep babbling myself, but what are thoughts?
I don't necessarily disagree with any of that part. Mm-hmm. What I have in one issue is the informed consent, because if you're going to tell me that urine collection is equal to this cystocentesis, that's some kind of automatic, no, it's not.
Right.
That's not how you collect urine. My doctor's never done that. I go in privacy in a cup, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so for somebody saying, well, that's automatically how they do it. No. That's not the... Telling somebody I'm going to collect urine and tell them I'm going to do that is not the same thing. They're not equal.
I would say it's an assumption that it's probably the most common way of collecting urine in animals, but is it fair for us to assume that a client understands?
Maybe dogs and cats.
Yeah.
In anything else, it's not.
That's what we're dealing with.
I guarantee.
But you're not going to do it on a horse.
Do that on a horse? No. You don't do it in cattle, sheep, pigs, or anything else either.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about a dog in a small animal practice. So I mean, so I agree.
So
I agree
that common knowledge is what I'm saying.
And I agree that is there an assumption that the veterinarian assumed that the client would understand that could be a problem there. But I would not say it's an uncommon way of getting it. I'd say it's probably the most common way of obtaining urine in a small animal practice.
Would the cystocentesis be considered a premium sample as far as cerulean and whatnot?
For urine cultures, it is going to be, because it avoids the rest of the urinary tract, the vaginal vault, or the prepuce, or wherever we're going to be looking at. So you're going to be able to see what's in the urine. Now, in a female dog, like I said, we could have a vaginitis or an infection lower down that we're not going to pick up on a cysto alone. But yeah, if you're going to be doing a urinary culture, if you talk to the pathologist, if you talk to the ClinPath people, most of the time they're going to say either a catheterization or cystocentesis, and it's very difficult to catheterize a female dog awake, even asleep.
Dr. Wright, and to the other doctors on the board, is there anything that could have or should have been done once the Frank blood was drawn? Are there any alarm bells, that red flags, that is there anything in a protocol that you use that would say that?
In hindsight, yeah, but I mean in the moment,
I don't even know that it would have crossed anyone's mind that that's what had happened. You would have thought you hit some superficial vessel somewhere. Like, I don't even know that you would have said, oh my God, I think I just lacerated the vena cava. Because it doesn't happen. I mean, if you ask...
It's pretty deep.
Okay, if all of us in this room say, how many cystos have we done? And how many of us have ever lacerated? I don't even know anyone that's ever lacerated a vena cava. In 25 years of practice, I can't say I know one veterinarian that's had this happen. So... That's how rare it is. Wow. It's not something that I would have ever even expected.
And that's why I ask about the quantity of blood. There's a difference between a little bit in the hub and
a full syringe.
A few syringes few cc's of blood, that makes things a lot different.
Well, especially when you say that a CBT, they're allowed to perform this procedure as well?
I don't think there's any restrictions on it. I would say it that way as opposed to allowed.
Okay. But, it's not an expensive procedure, right?
No,
so you wouldn't have to get approval first for...
Well, you need permission.
You should mention it.
If there's a charge for it, there is something on that.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing is not this obscure risk, right? Because there's a lot of things that you guys do every day that has these crazy obscure risks, right? And you're not talking about all those. So I get the point that the respondent's attorney made there. However, typically, at least my experience, is we need to collect a urine sample from your dog. The best way to do that today would be a cystocentesis, and this is what that procedure is. Again, very rare do you talk about these crazy obscure risks. Now from there, I have definitely, in my experience as a technician going over a treatment plan, had people say, whoa, no you're not, you know? And so then the doctor may talk to them about why there needs to be a urine culture versus an in-house urinalysis. Those give different results, like what Dr. Wright said. So I guess that's the biggest thing in informed consent at this point is, did they know this procedure was happening? Because it is a procedure. You are stabbing a needle into a body, but the obscure risk, I know about it, right? Whenever I've been terrified of that, the possible outcome, but I think that makes you more responsible, right? Whenever you're doing procedures, if you know the risks, but again, how do you go over that really, really small risk? And just as any other case we've had where there's a really teeny tiny risk, that does not offer any sort of solace to that percentage of that outcome. So in this case, this patient, that does not make the client feel any better it's this really tiny risk and your pet experienced that. So I think that's what we have to figure out is, should there have been the information passed along that when we're collecting urine, this is the thing that I'm intending on doing today, whether it comes from the team member going over the treatment plan or the doctor. I don't know that matters who informed, but right now it's neither both sides are basically saying, no, we didn't say how we were going to get it, we just were going to get it. And does that matter? That's, I think, the question.
And is it fairly standard? I thought I heard testimony that the vet techs were doing the cystocentesis.
It really depends on the education of your team. Okay. So for example, some practices, if they have CBTs that are experienced, but really it comes down to the doctor's comfort level, because it's the doctor's veterinarian's license, right? As to how they've trained their team, what their level of competence is. And again, in this case, those team members didn't even make an attempt. They looked with an ultrasound, which is a great way to do a cystocentesis. I've worked with a lot of doctors that don't, use an ultrasound. So
there's still a lot of practices that don't even have.
They don't even have ultrasound.
Yeah. This is done all the time.
Yeah. You don't have to have an ultrasound, but it is a great standard to have an ultrasound.
I'd like to go back to the actual procedure and just give you a little bit of my experience with it and how I look at it. First of all, I don't allow technicians to do cystocentesis, number one. Number two, if the bladder is easily palpated and you can push it up against the wall, you don't need an ultrasound. It's a very simple, quick thing to do. But now you can't get the bladder, you can't feel it up against the wall. Now you put the ultrasound and you look. And in my experience, if the bladder is small, I stop. I'm not gonna try to stick a needle in a small bladder and a small dog, squirming or not. Because what's the easy thing to do? Let's wait a little bit. Let's wait a little bit and now the bladder, and now the team and the doctor all go, now we have a bladder, it isn't gonna be such a scary deal. I'm not going to go probing around trying to get in a little bladder. I one time hit the pelvis and no consequences to that action except it hurt like the dickens for this dog. And maybe that hasn't happened, but it made me go, no more sticking small bladder. No matter how successful I've been in the past trying to go after a small bladder, it's got to have sufficient size and it's got to have be visualized sufficient size, or let's do another method, or hey, let's wait an hour. Let's talk to the owner and tell her what we're doing. We'll wait for some more urine.
Could you give sub-Q fluids sure. during that time to facilitate that?
Or? You can. It's going to it's potentially going to alter the dilution.
Okay.
So
that's
could,
what I was concerned.
If you're looking at renal, yeah. then you okay. can.
And
you
I'm sure there is some rare yeah. consequence that could happen with sub-Q fluids, too.
Yes. You can haggle down with
being
that.
Being an abscess.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean,
yeah, so I mean everything
you do has some level of risk associated with it.
And that's why I have a hard time with like the malpractice and incompetence and stuff here. But I mean, I think the informed consent is more where... Yeah. Sounds like everybody is. So I will make a motion unless anybody else has any other pressing comments to make.
I mean, I don't know, though, like, if you're asking about the informed consent part. I think while it would be ideal and certainly what would be recommended to talk about assisted syncytiasis being the use of a needle into the bladder, mm-hmm. I don't think that that's customary. I think it's very customary in practice yeah. to say we're going to get a urine sample and they take them to the back and half the time, and you would never even know how they got a urine sample because no one would ever even ask because nothing ever happens, right?
Well, I can almost guarantee
I will ask from this day forward.
Well, yeah, now you will. And I'm sure the doctor will, and I'm sure the client will, and I'm sure, because once you've had it happen, yeah. But like, I would say, if I'm just saying norm across the industry, I don't. I
can't
it's
recollect
bad.
Whether I've had a dog or a cat that had that we had to collect urine for. I really can't recall that. But
informed consent versus.
But I guarantee. I mean, when you just say I'm going to collect urine, that a needle has nothing to do yeah. with that picture in my mind.
That's why I approach it. I mean, I don't go in there with a form. You need to sign this, mm-hmm. allowing me to do this. But I say this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and that's what I say. I'm like, we're going to go do what's called a cystocentesis. Basically, I take a vaccine needle, stick it in the bladder, get a sample.
Exactly.
Right. And it doesn't have to be much.
Especially if you're doing like blood work and chemistries and CBCs, you want the CBC to chemistry and the urine analysis all.
Yeah, at the same time.
Times zero.
Yeah.
Ideally, you know what I mean? I would think.
And I think if we would have said something, even just commenting on it, how we were going to get it, we wouldn't be in. Well, we might still be in the situation, but I mean. It wouldn't be here, but yeah, that's my concern. It wasn't even mentioned because I don't go into giving an injection could cause vagal down and they can their heart can stop just from this. I mean, we don't talk about all those risks. I remember when I had my wisdom teeth taken out at 17, I got sat down in front of a VCR. Yes, I'm that old, and it was basically talking about how I might die, but at least the teeth will be gone. Like, all right, cool. So I mean, there are levels of that informed consent. And what is that actual level? I don't think there's a true standard to it, but at least it needs to be mentioned, and that's kind of my concern. I guess the question there is, does it raise to a level of violation or is it a letter of concern?
Yeah, I think focusing on the procedure itself mm-hmm. and how it was done, I've got some concerns there that it's more than just the informed consent. It was actually the way the procedure was handled. Mm-hmm. So, it's your motion.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I don't have any concerns about the actual procedure. I mean, it's unfortunate, but I don't have concerns about it. But I mean, we can have more than one motion, of course. But I mean, I don't know your thoughts on it.
You're
going to have
an 8-week-old kitten. Like,
what's that?
You want to talk about small bladders? Like,
you can grab that.
I know, but
cats are simple.
I mean, I get that you've had an experience that has made you a little bit more cautious. But what I would say is, I don't think that that's the norm.
I don't think that's the only reason why I'm more cautious.
No, and there's an argument maybe that we do urine analyses too often in veterinary medicine. I mean, you go in with urinary tract infection signs in humans, and they're like, here's some antibiotics, and if you don't get better, then we'll test it in people. It's like, all right, immediately, let's test every time.
So we have to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I've done that too. But I guess, like I said.
Hey, how many times do they use a needle to test you?
Okay, that's what I'm saying. But I can also respond when they say pee in a cup. And hopefully not like
it. And I can pee in a sterile cup.
Yeah. But
and control the cleanliness.
No, but between a statute violation and a letter of concern, I don't know your thoughts on that.
That's not fair.
Relative, yeah. That's all relative.
Anybody has thoughts on statute violation versus letter of concern?
I agree. From my personal experience, it's usually I'm going to take them in the back and get a urine specimen. I have two 19-year-old cats that have both been in renal failure for 3 years, and I give them sub-Q twice a week, so now you've scared me.
They're very rare for anything weird. Yeah.
I didn't mean to scare you. I was just making a point. Now I feel that, Jay. Thanks.
But anyhow, when the first time I remember my vet taking, saying, I'm going to get a urine sample, and I came back and I said, how'd you get it? And she said, I took a needle and stuck it in her bladder. And that was how I found out. Yeah. So, I mean, I agree that it's not something that in my limited experience is customarily explained. But is it considered an invasive procedure because it's a needle going into the body or no?
I mean, because it's going into an open abdomen, I would consider it invasive, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't
consider it invasive, but I would also say, ideally, we would all be like Dr. Nosley and really go into detail on what it is and explain it. And how, like, that's ideal. I'm just saying that, sure. Like, I don't, if you, when we look at this, we look at minimum standard of care. That is ideal. That's not the minimum standard of care, in my mind, but.
Okay.
Still answering my
question. Okay, so.
letter of concern.
I said letter of concern.
No, okay, yeah, because it's kind of more on leading now, so. So I'll make a motion, except I don't see any evidence for gross negligence or malpractice because I do think it was appropriate and there's some conversations there. Now, if you want to make a motion before mine then, but I don't have anything there. The necropsy in a timely manner, you know, it was still done the next day. I don't see that as being a problem there. Maybe there's some confusion from the investigative committee that way, but I don't see a problem that way. So it's all just around that informed consent. And like I said, based around discussion, I would make a motion to dismiss the case and offer a letter of concern around discussing cystocytosis, or at least mentioning it.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second? I'll second that. But I'll just comment that I think this case is horrible for the owner because they're blaming themselves to some degree of, I should have never let this happen, right? Yeah. And if anything comes out of it, I would just say I hope that they understand that this procedure happens on a regular basis. This was not something they did or should feel bad about. That's
what I would say. This isn't, unfortunate things happen in medicine. Yeah, we can't always fully predict.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 22-114 and offer a letter of concern. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. So two nays. Okay. So the motion passes. So the board has voted to dismiss the case and offer a letter of concern. This concludes this matter, and Dr. Barnes, you will receive written notification of the board's action shortly. If you have any questions in the meantime for either party, you may direct your comments to Victoria Whitmore, the board's executive director. And this concludes the informal interview. Thank you all for being here today.